civic theater is finding new dimensions of being truly civic. We know of the many relationships that Spokane Civic Theater has with helping local playwrights and playwrights festivals and things like that. It's a bigger deal to mount a musical, but that's exactly what's happening this weekend, and this weekend only. Spokane Civic Theater, Moby Dick, a musical, which is being presented Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon. Parenthetically, I have to say I'm told it's sold out, but maybe if one can twist arms hard enough, one could get in, but that is the current status of it. They did add the Thursday performance because it did sell out in this one weekend only. A musical with the words created by Ed Bryan, the music by William Berry, and we're going to meet a couple cast members here from the pianist and the director and other people as we go along this hour. But let's begin with you, Ed, because this is your project, isn't it? Isn't this your love?
It is. Back in 2013, I listened to Moby. I'd never read Moby Dick, and I listened to Moby Dick on books on tape as I was driving around. And during the course of that listening, I thought, "Wow, this you could write a musical on this." And so I researched it, and no one had. There was an opera written a while back, but there was not a musical show written. So I came home and I told my wife. I said, "I think I'll write a musical on Moby Dick." And she says, okay. And so I started writing lyrics, and I wrote lyrics for 2 years. I just searched through the book and found places that would really work in musical theater. And in the meantime, I thought, someplace I've got to find a composer to do this, because I am not a musical composer, and I'm not even a musician. I can't sing. So I contacted four or five different people that had composed music before. And I was in a show at the Civic Theater one Christmas of 2015, I think. And I asked Bruce, the bass player, I said, "Do you know a composer?" And he says, "Yeah." He says, "You need to talk to William. He plays trumpet here in the pit." He says, "I'll introduce you." So the rest is history. Sure. William is great.
Right. Well, we're going to bring in William in a moment, but I want to follow a little bit more this process of writing a musical, because we were discussing off mic the two of the titles that you're the lyricist, but you also wrote the book, which is the theatrical term for the play itself. All 609 pages or whatever of Moby Dick, you probably had to do more than a little editing. What did you focus on specifically
There's an awful lot of whale stuff in Moby Dick, and it can become a very boring book if you're reading about, right whales and all these other kinds of whales and everything else. So I focused on the action part of the book, and I also focused on trying to find places for women in this story. There just are no women in Moby Dick's story. And so I created some characters. During the course of the writing, I also came across a poem that was written in 1851, which is the time this book was written, written by a lady in Nantucket called I Want to Be a Sailor's Wife. And I listened to that and I thought, oh man, I've got to have that in this play. Mm-hmm. And so there's a song, I Want to Be a Whaler's Wife, in the mm-hmm. play that all the women get to sing. It's a great song. I had trouble trying to figure out how we were going to get a whale on stage, and I struggled with that a lot. And I finally decided, let's just make the whale music. We're not going to put him on stage.
Sure.
And there's a French scene in the show that I thought was great. The Pequod comes upon a French a whaling boat that is stinking up the entire ocean. It's a funny scene. It's a funny thing in Moby Dick. Actually, Moby Dick has quite a bit of humor in it if you start studying those things. And I wanted to write a French song for the French sailors to sing, so I spent a lot of time doing that, and I sent it to a lady that I know in Colville that teaches French to translate it for me, and she sent it to a guy in France who translated it for me and sent it back and said, "This is a pretty good song." He says, I don't want to charge you for this. He says, just when this show gets to Paris, I want a free ticket.
There you go. Well, good. So they were talking with Ed Bryan, who wrote the, was responsible for the words in Moby Dick, a musical, which opens this Thursday at Civic. And then William Barry, whom we know for a lot of imagination, for a lot of ability. I'm going to talk about you for a while. A lot of ability to take elements and discern what they're really about, and certainly to take songs and to take lyrics and do great things with them musically. When Ed approached you and said, hey, do you want to write some tunes, you know, based on Moby Dick, what was your first, second, and third reaction?
No, and, well, maybe. he gave me what he had as far as the script at that point, and I took it home and looked at it. I thought, well, this guy's actually done his homework and research, and there's some stuff here. It was fairly early stages, but thinking, well, there's possibility. It's a lot of work to do it. It's been a couple of years in doing it, but in fact thinking, well, Moby Dick has not been done successfully. It's about as iconic as you get. I get the New Yorker, and every other week in the New Yorker, there's a cartoon with Moby Dick and Ahab and stuff. It's on the news. We're referring to white whales. It's central to our thinking. It's just an iconic thing, and that nobody's done a successful musical of it is one of the challenges. And that's kind of the current trend, is to find an old book or an old something and redo it. So, well, there's possibilities here, and it is it's somewhere between a boy's adventure tale. It's very exciting stuff. We're worrying about the act two being a little long, but you don't even notice it. It's action-packed stuff. So there you have it. It was like, no, I don't want it. Okay, sure, and kind of got suckered in.
Okay, what about actual lyrics for a song? Let's kind of get into it, and then in a moment we're going to hear a song. So, Ed, you had Melville's pretty good beginning, but then did you have a lot of license to make things rhyme and to move things around and to get phrase length and all that stuff?
Yes. An example. Father Mapple has a sermon at the beginning of the book about Jonah and the whale, of course. And the first draft of that was probably 5 pages long. And I thought, whoa, who's going to want to sit and listen to a sermon sung for 5 pages? So I cut it down, and there's a program that you can get called Rhyme Zone on the computer, and Rhyme Zone is a great thesaurus. And I use that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I would just start and write down what I wanted this thing to say and work on it until, I mean, that's what took so long. It took a long time to get rhymes together. Sure. And I didn't want Ahab's songs to rhyme. I wanted them to be more stark and so on. So his songs don't rhyme. I tried to keep the meter right so that it would work. I don't know. Yeah.
I want William to weigh in on that. So then you're given these lyrics, and talk about what goes on in your brain.
Oh, you don't want to know. But there's a bunch of things. One of Ed's concepts is to be historically accurate to some point, and to, let's talk about having a dulcimer and a fiddle and stuff like that. And then, what's this going to be? It could be a rock opera. It could be, a whole bunch of different ways to go with it. The modern trend, and I don't want to say we're Les Mis, but kind of a Les Mis kind of thing where it's through... There's music under everything, and it's movie music. There's something always setting the mood, which some people think of as operatic, but that's what's happening. It's not, we're not in the 20s where there's conversation, and stop and do a pop song. But so there's kind of two different things happening here. There's a lot of the tavern scene and the girls' song you talk about, the Nantucket girls. There's a lot of folk song kind of things that you could be convinced that it's an authentic folk song from the era, give or take. And then there's dramatic portions that we'll hear some of today with Ahab and his wife and stuff, which are more really, really setting a mood and maybe sound a little more operatic, but it kind of takes us back and forth emotionally between, you know, the folk setting, and here's the people back in Nantucket, and here's the boys on the ship dancing around and blowing off some steam in a folk kind of thing, and then back to some really emotional, heart-wrenching songs. So it's a little of both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's hear one of them. We're about to go to a duet. The ship is loaded. This is between Ahab and his wife, Annie. Anything you want to say, either of you want to say about this song on the way into it?
I'll jump in just to say that Ahab doesn't have a wife. Ed created that, you know. So,
and Gene Hardy wants to come in and dissent.
Ahab does have a wife. He does mention her in the book, that she's a much younger woman. They got married. They spent basically one night together, and then he went off to sea, leaving her with child. And so Ed has taken that fact and expanded it and created a character for her to actually play.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is the point in the play where Ahab's leaving on the boat. She's begging him not to go and thinks he's obsessed. He's on the ship, she's on the dock, and they part company. So that's pretty much where we are.
They have this young son, like a year old.
Sure. The duet called The Ship Is Loaded, sung by Carlin Kaler as Annie and Bill Gary as Ahab.
Before me bow, stark and white, I am master now. Moby not flee. I will reclaim my soul from thee.
Moby Dick, ye cannot flee. He will reclaim my soul from thee.
We've been hearing this song, the duet, The Ship is Loaded, between Ahab and his wife, Annie, from Moby Dick, a musical, which is this Thursday through Sunday at Spokane Civic Theater. And those roles were Carlin Kaler as Annie and Bill Gary as Ahab. And so let's kind of get into a little bit more. Come on in. Let's get Gene Hardy in here, who is directing this. Before we bring in Annie, this is an amazing project, isn't it? To take a brand new thing and you're kind of workshopping it and creating it and directing it and putting it together. Talk about the process a little bit.
Exactly. I mean, it's so different, obviously, from putting on or directing a show that maybe you've seen before, you've heard before, it's in your consciousness. No matter how you end up doing it, you're going on ideas you've had even from the past. This was a new thing. And again, I was with Ed's wife when he started to talk to me about Moby Dick, and I was like, sure, yeah. But I often refer to Ed as the Energizer Bunny, and he would not give up on getting this project going. Mm-hmm. And we have had some meetings, some read-throughs. We've realized through the read-throughs that there was too much material and it needed to be cut. And they were both great about going, okay, yeah, we need to. The French scene to which Ed refers was also originally, what, about a 15-minute scene. It was wonderful, but there was too much of it. Mm-hmm. And so it was a process of finding those moments that were the things that Ed really wanted to emphasize in the play. What was what was it about? Scholars will endlessly debate. What is Moby Dick about? I believe that Ed has tried to make it about the people involved in this situation. What drives Ahab? What drives the men on the ship to follow Ahab? Mm-hmm. What is happening to the people back home when whalers go off on 3-, 4-, 5-year voyages? Sure. And then to put that on a stage, the size of a postage stamp with a cast of 29 people, and to try to find a way of doing it that that where you can see what the potential would be. Mm. It's quite an epic story, and we are doing it in a very pared-down way, but we wanted to show action and show what the potential of the play would be if you were able to present it in the epic style to which it is, you know, suited.
Okay, because it is in the studio theater, because, of course, the Dog at Midnight show is going on upstairs at the same time. Let's bring in Carlin for a minute. Talk, Ed, you wanted to come back into this conversation, talk about your role as the person back home while the man runs away, and talk about that part of the dramatic.
Well, my character Annie, she only barely exists in the book. I don't even think she has a name.
But for me,
I'm very much on stage. There's a character, my son Daniel, who's played by this adorable little boy named Patrick. And getting to build a relationship with him has really been the core of my character for me, because she is this new mom who's young and she's left at home forever with this son that she didn't really intend to raise on her own, but that's what happened. And he's the main person she has in her life, and she just dedicates everything to him. So for me as an actor, it's been really important to build a relationship with Patrick, who plays my son.
So I wanted to interrupt to say, so Ed, is her role in the more of creating kind of the tapestry for it, or is it dramatic tension? if there's a difference between those two? Is it a, you know?
That's a tough question. I would say, you know, I haven't heard her give me her backstory here. So I created it because I thought we needed a women in the show, and I wanted to have some tension in their relationship, and to somehow show that Ahab actually had a heart. He wasn't just all a maniac. I wanted to be more three-dimensional than just somebody's out there trying to kill a whale.
Good. Okay. Yeah. No. That makes good sense. We need to move on, and we're going to go ahead and hear the song. I think William, you kind of said this is the big tune, in a way, that What Price I Paid, which even the title, for those that know Moby Dick, we would have a sense of that. So we're going to go back to the. We're going to go back to the studio in which Bill Gary is Ahab, with pianist Annie Flood, who's the music director, and going to sing this really significant song, which is called What Price I Paid.
Tis a mild, mild looking day. Mr. Starbuck, sir, upon such a day as this, I stared at my first whale. A boy harpooner of 18, 40 years ago. 40 years of whaling, 40 years on the pitiless sea. 40 years I have forsaken the land. 40 years I made war on the deep. Yes, Starbuck, 40 years, and only 3 ashore. What price I paid for days slipped away. Where goes a life? A life of desolation and solitude. The poorest landsman has fresh fruit. My bread is moldy crusts, I feast upon a dry salted fare, whilst oceans away, my young girl wife lays alone upon our bed. My son remembers me not. What price I paid for days slipped away. Where goes a my wife, rather my widow. Only one night did I dent her pillow. The next I sailed for Cape Horn. Then to me she bore a son. What price I paid for days slipped away. Where goes a life? And now from a thousand lowerings, the madness, the frenzy, old Ahab doggedly chased his prey. Fool! As old Ahab been. Do I look very old, Starbuck? I feel deadly faint, bowed and humped. hush this old gray hair aside. God, God, crack my heart. What price I paid for days slipped away. Where goes our life? Starbuck, stand close to me. Let me look in a human eye. By the great hearthstone, 'tis a magic glass. From that faraway home, so many oceans away, I see my wife and child looking back at me in thine eye. What price I paid for days slipped away. Where goes our life?
And the final words, which are the name of the aria, What Price I Paid, sung for us in our studio by Bill Gary in the role of Ahab, joined by Annie Flood, the music director who is pianist for this. So let's find just a few more things about this performance. The performance is Thursday through Sunday, which are sold out, but this is all the more reason to be illuminating it. Bill, come over here to this microphone and kind of talk about, go ahead, sit down and be comfortable. Talk about inhabiting the character of Ahab.
Oh, it's a big character.
Well, yeah, I know.
Well, I learned more by singing this than mm-hmm. I've ever known before, but he's a temporal leader, and he's mm-hmm. the captain of the boat, and he finds an enemy that they can all gather around, and that's the way he leads. That's what all temporal, kings and captains and presidents do. They find an exterior enemy that they can unite the whole tribe on.
Nice. and to Annie Flood, the music director, what's the ensemble? What's the instrumentation of the? Is it simply piano or?
No. So what we're using is piano, and we do have a synthesizer that's playing, string sounds when needed, drum sounds when needed, and then we also have a violin.
Oh yeah, that mm-hmm. that makes it perfectly American, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Among other things, well, talk about your perspective on putting together a new piece like this.
Sure. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun being able to work with a living composer, mm-hmm. and also to be able to work with a living piece as we mm-hmm. have gone through the rehearsal process, deciding what works, what didn't work, what we had to cut, what we had to rearrange in order to make this the best that it could be. And it's been, really fun working with such a big cast, too, making big sounds and different kinds of colors throughout to really bring the story alive.
Good. And that's Ahab. I keep calling it Ahab's Whale. I guess I went to that restaurant too many times in my life. Moby Dick, a musical, which Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Civic Theater, and then at 7:30 Sunday afternoon at 2. And I'm told it's sold out, but maybe one can twist an arm or find a spare seat or something like that. William Barry's music and lyrics put together by Ed Bryan. We have to move on to another thing, so thank you all for presenting this sense of this wonderful project where Civic Theater is being truly civic. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.